Okay. First of all, why would you be so presumptuous as to think I've never worn lipstick?
That's a good point. That's my you first know what? Question. You know what? Good job. That's a good point.
Okay.
That was rude of me.
Thank you. Never assume anything.
This is The Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
Hello, all. Welcome back. Today, we are lifting the lid on the Cody Olympics. It's exciting. The Olympics are not beginning today. The torch has not been lit, but we're advising you that the Olympics are coming. We're revealing the categories.
You think this Olympics will fall as flat as our last Olympics did?
What Olympics was that? I can't even remember.
Or we like came, remember we came up, it was like every day Olympics.
Yeah.
And then we kind of just like realized after a couple weeks that no one gives a shit. So we just like kind of. this is like, we're laughing right now. It becomes a serious thing because of Greg's coughing, but we're having fun here. We like to have fun.
Wow. Why did you have to make me laugh like that? I had forgotten that the previous.
I am killing my dad with this laughter, literally.
Right. Here's what we do here on the Greg Cody Show podcast. We throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks.
Right.
Not all of it does, but I think this will. The Cody Olympics.
This is a better bit.
Yeah, this is me against Chris Cody. This is me 30 plus years older than Chris Cody, trying to compete with him in mostly athletic events.
And so this is where we differ. We should talk this out because we've agreed we're going to do 10 events.
Yeah.
Which is a little odd because we could end up 5-5. So maybe we should do 11 or 9. But we're going to pick sports / things we can compete at that we think will be fun to track. And we're going to try to make it like, you know, we're going to do golf one day. One of them is going to be golf, but I'm going to give you a stroke per hole. So I will give you 18 strokes. So we're like, it's not going to be, because I know what you're thinking out there, audience. Chris is just going to wipe the floor with his dad and all these things. So we're going to try to make this even. Outside of that, though, I don't think there's a lot of, most of the events are just straight up outside of that one.
I think golf, where you're giving me a stroke a hole, is the only handicapped event. And I need it. Good Lord, do I need it.
I should probably give you some in bowling, too, if we're being honest, because I think bowling's one of them.
Well, you know, you just rolled a 215. I weigh 215, so we're even. What?
Why don't you right now go through our list of 10 that we think we've agreed on?
Okay.
Why don't you read them for the people? The 10 events that me and my dad are going to compete in the Greg Cody Olympics, the Greg Cody Show Olympics Part 2.
Right. And I will say, negotiations continue. Lawyers are involved. There's been some discord, such as Christopher refusing to include Ms. Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Because it was the one event that dad was assured of winning.
Well, see, that's what I mean. There. Like, dad, at least with golf, I'm giving you strokes. Like, you're as dominant over me in Pac-Man as I am in golf. So, like, there's no way for you to give me points in Ms. Pac-Man. So, that's why we're not doing that.
Well, there is, actually. We could have a thing where I have to beat you by 20,000 points.
But it's just a random thing that you're very good at. See, I know I even said to you, we can put golf off the table. Like, I don't want this to be something where I'm just a clear, heavy favorite in everything. I want this to be fun for the audience. Like, just because I'm saying I'm refusing to do Ms. Pac-Man because of your advantage, you can refuse golf. You can refuse bowling.
No, I'm happy to take the handicap because I love playing golf with you. And I think it'll be an interesting match if you're giving me 18 strokes. But you hit the ball 280 yards. I hit the ball a foot and a half past the women's tee. So
I'll play back a tee than you. We can do this. We can.
We'll work that out.
There's no scenario you're beating me in golf, regardless of where I'm at. Let's just be in there.
We agree, though, that event number one, perhaps the signature event of the Cody Olympics, is 18 holes of golf handicap.
Well, I don't think we need to number these and commit to doing them in some order. Let's just say the 10 events.
Okay. All right. Golf. Okay. The next event is ping pong. Best of 7. Okay. Games to 21. We're both pretty good at ping pong.
Yeah. That should be a close fight.
I have to say that's a pretty good matchup. The next event scares me a little bit. It's a 2-lap swimming race on Olympic size lanes.
Right. In my dad's city, there's a park and a pool that has the lanes, you know, buoyed off, and we can do this right. So I'm excited about that one. And I feel pretty confident in that one.
And I think I may surprise you. You know, I'm an Aquaman to a certain degree. And we'll be on the honor system, and we'll time each other. It's not like we're going to be going nose to nose.
Or we're going to get somebody to videotape. Like, let's not commit. Like, I don't like you. I think you're over committing on like when we're going to do these and how we're going to do them. Just say the damn sports and we'll figure out the rest.
Okay. The next event is the one where I think I need to bring my cardiologist. It's a 40-yard dash.
Yeah, no, we're punting on this one. I've already made the executive decision. We're going to pick something else. You can choose it.
Okay.
I just think I don't need you sprinting.
So the foot race is out.
Let's pivot on that. You're too old. Like you're coughing with your asthma. Like we're not going to sprint.
Yeah, let's not go into details. And this interests me because I honestly think I can beat you with this. It's 50-50 free throws in basketball.
Right. A free throw contest. 50 each. See who makes more. Simple.
Okay. Football kicking. We both try 10 30-yard field goals.
Right. Whoever makes the most wins. All right, that's easy.
With overtime if needed. Now, I'm a guy who kicked a 50-yard field goal, but it was roughly 50 years ago. So, I'm not real confident on that one. This is an event that Christopher suggested that I don't particularly like. It's the shopping event where we each have the same 20-item list, and we sprint through a store to see who can get these 20
without asking for help. And there's some nuance to this one, because it can't be like we either have to go to individually our own Publixes, or we need to go together to a one we're unfamiliar with. Cause like everyone knows you get to know your Publix. So it would be a disadvantage for me if we did this at your Publix. It would be a disadvantage for you if we did it at my Publix. So we either need to each do it separately at our own Publixes, or we need to come up with just a Publix that neither of us have ever been into before.
Okay. The problem with this is that when you're sprinting through a crowded
grocery
store,
you don't sprint.
You look like a shoplifter. Right. You look like a shoplifter.
That's why we're not actually going to be sprinting. I think it's more of just like briskly walking.
Okay.
Like I don't like think like you should like it's not that serious where you need to start like running over 4-year-olds with shopping carts. Like it's
right.
I would think that both of us would keep the perspective of that this is not that important.
The next event, we are crouched over a pool table, best of 7 games.
Yep. I don't know why you just didn't say we play pool, best of 7.
Well, because then it can be a swimming pool. That's why I had us crouched over a pool table.
Good.
The next event is bowling, best of 3 games. I'm going to count on you having an off game and me overachieving.
I can give you a couple, I can give you some pins too. Like we can come up with something. What are we at right now?
I think that's 9 include, but again, we have to exclude the foot race.
So maybe we could just do these 9. That way we can't end in a tie.
Well, I want to do the last one, which is one set of tennis.
Well, no, that's 9. If we do that list minus the racing, we have our 9 because that was a list of 10, I believe.
Okay. I negotiate with you. I propose because shopping to me is the only one that's not the least bit sports related. I propose replacing shopping with frisbee golf.
Oh, but neither of us are like know how to do that.
You and I both got brand new frisbee golf kits for Christmas, and neither one of us has used it.
No, I know. I'm interested in playing that sport. It just doesn't seem that interesting, like for us to compete in it. Like I think the shopping one is funnier than that. I think the videos that we can potentially get from it and put out on social, like I think that one's like a hit. Like I think that one will play well on the internet. And
okay, we can negotiate the fine.
And remember, we're going to turn this into a podcast. There's going to be an episode in the coming weeks of the Greg Cody Show that is all these events. We're going to be recording audio as we go, kind of like doing this all behind the scenes, and then we'll go through the whole process in one pod. Hopefully it'll take one podcast. Maybe it might be two. If like we're hoping it gets into one podcast, if it's incredibly long, we'll break it up into two. But we're going to record, we're going to have live recordings from each of these events, talking you through it, giving you updates. So I think the shopping one plays well. I think we should put a bookmark in this conversation.
Okay.
Because we haven't even mentioned our guests we have coming on right now. We're doing this live. Nick Wright is our guest today. He's about to join any minute. He'll pop into the Zoom. I'm excited. I actually think in terms of high profile named guests, Nick Wright is He is pretty high up there in the sports media landscape. I'm trying to think of bigger names that we've had on this podcast than Nick Wright. He's definitely, I think, in the top 10. Easy.
I don't know about that.
I mean, who have we had? Our claim to fame is Tim Kirchen and Dave Barry. I mean,
Tim Kirchen's pretty big. We've had Mina Kimes. We've had Sarah Spain.
But I think Nick Wright has, you know, he's up there with them. He's equal. He's equals with everyone we just named.
You can't go wrong with Wright. That's my credo in life. I do think that he's a rising star at Fox Sports.
Yeah.
I think that he's somebody who's coming after, Colin Cowherd, quite frankly, for the title.
I'm a little skeptical that you probably 2 weeks ago had no idea who Nick Wright is and are just kind of like you've learned of him since he recognized you on that Le Batard show appearance a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't deny that because it's a matter of public record.
But that's the thing is like we could even tell Nick Wright that because it's not it's just you. That's on you. Right. Like Nick, everybody in sports media knows who Nick Wright is. So like it's more of just a funny joke on you I don't think that would surprise him because remember when he appeared on the Le Batard show and he was super excited to see you.
Right.
He even said like Greg probably has no idea who I am, but I'm super excited to see him.
Yeah. See, I can play the old guy card. You know, I mean, I still think Howard Cosell's in the Monday Night booth. You know, it takes me like roughly 40 years to catch up to modern trends. So it may or may not be true that I'd never heard of Nick Wright 2 or 3 weeks ago. But ever since then, I've become a big fan of him, particularly today as he guests on the Greg Cody Show podcast.
I'm excited to talk to him. His career is skyrocketing. I mean, this guy has a few years ago, he was just kind of like a panelist that you'd see every once in a while on Fox Sports. And now he's got his own show in the mornings. He's got his own podcast. He's like, you know, outside of Colin Cowherd, he's the take master at Fox Sports. So I'm excited to get to know him.
Yeah, he's a take master. There's no doubt. And speaking of big time media guests we want to have on, I'm slowly reeling Tony Kornheiser into the GCS boat.
Yeah.
I agreed to be on his podcast again this week. Check out Thursday's episode.
Weren't you supposed to be on Wednesday, but you overslept?
yeah, you had to bring that up. I did, as a matter of fact.
And then you were blaming your wife or something?
Well, she had to leave for work real early on Wednesday. I asked her to set the alarm for me at 7:30. She didn't.
Didn't? And that's, why would you say didn't. That weird?
Okay. She didn't. You know, it's like slang.
It sounded like you said she did.
No, she didn't.
Stupid.
and I slept till 9:30 and did not have my phone with him. So Kornheiser's producer.
That's a guy who doesn't have any young kids anymore. Sleep until 9:30. Must be nice.
Yeah. Right. The unfortunate thing is Michael, who still lives at home, also slept till 9:30 because daddy wasn't there to wake him up for work. That's a whole different story.
What kind of life is this where you're dependent on mom to wake you? Michael's dependent on you to like what?
Right.
This seems like have you guys heard of an alarm clock? I don't understand why we're waking people with people at this point. Every phone has an alarm. Like what's happening?
Yeah. My phone obviously has an alarm, which I've used many times. Has a snooze button and everything. But your mother failed me. She was supposed to wake me and didn't. Anyway, I apologize profusely to Tony the K's producer. He said, cool. We just hope you were okay. Can you do it tomorrow, which was today, which was Thursday? So I did it. So check that out.
How does that feel to get the point in your life where people are worried for your, like, if you're dead or not, like when they don't hear from you? Like that happened, that honestly happened on Wednesday morning. Mom was calling me. Hey, can you get a hold of your dad? He hasn't answered. It's 9:30. He was supposed to be up for this, blah, blah, blah. Like mom was worried. Like you've reached that point in your life where if people can't get a hold of you for like an hour, they think you're dead.
Yeah. It makes me sad because I think of myself as a youthful mid-60s. I don't think of myself as an old mid-60s. But the problem is my voice, which sort of goes in and out like it is right now, I think makes me sound and seem older than I am, which is much to my chagrin. But I really feel like Tony the K will say yes, if begrudgingly, to come on our show because I've been on his show twice just since early February.
I want to make a bet on this, me and you. Some bet where if he comes on, I have to do something embarrassing on this show. If we never get him by, let's say, the end of the year, let's give ourselves at the end of the year, you have to do something because I am telling you, Dan Le Batard has, I would say, an equal relationship. Like Dan and him have done PTI. Like Dan is, you'd admit, as close as you are with Tony K, Dan's closer than you are.
Right. No, I don't.
Dan's had a podcast, a big podcast, for like over a decade, and I think Tony Kornheiser has begrudgingly called in once.
Right.
Like, it is just I just don't see a scenario where he's like, you know what, Greg, your podcast I'll do.
Yeah, I think he will. And I don't pretend that Tony and I are close personal friends. We have a professional, friendly relationship, but I think he'll do it. Anyway, where's Nick Wright? He's so big.
Look at you.
He's so big that he's stiffing us.
That's funny. It's 4:03. He was supposed to be here at 4. And he even is such a nice guy. He texted me, going to be 3 minutes late. So right now we are
3 minutes late.
And that's exactly right now. So he's exactly, you know, and technically he's not late yet because he said he'd be here at 4:03. So it's 4:03 and we'll see.
Wow. You know, that is a meticulous man who texts someone saying, I will be 3 minutes late, not a few minutes, not 5 minutes, not a little late, but 3 minutes.
It is impressive. Maybe I'll start there with him of just being like, are you always a guy that says exactly how many minutes later you're going to be? Or do you like to, because I'm a guy that in that spot, I would say if I think I'm going to be 3 minutes late, I'll say I'm going to be 5 minutes late.
Right.
That way I almost seem like a nice guy.
Yeah. I don't like putting a number on it. I'll just say I'll be a bit late. Or a little late.
Well, you're the worst with this stuff because you have this thing about showing up thing. Like you big time, like you're the guy that if you're supposed to be there somewhere at 4 o'clock, you're never showing up before 4:10.
It depends on the occasion.
Well, right. If it's obviously if it's like a movie or a concert, you will. But like anytime right. It's just like a casual gathering, you're very like, I can't be the first one. Like I need to let other people show up before I do.
Yeah. I hate appearing too eager to be somewhere.
Yeah.
I like being the guy who would rather be seen as fashionably late, even mm-hmm. though I hate other people who are fashionably late. When I'm hosting the event, I want people right on time, you know, but when I'm a guest at the event, I like to be late. Maybe that speaks ill of me.
Yeah, it does.
I don't know. Okay.
It's pretty hypocritical, but I don't see this is one of the things where you do this thing where you're like, I've been at your house when you guys were hosting a party that started at 4, and you don't give a shit if someone shows up at 4:20. Like
I do.
You just said something that is just not true.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, the last party I hosted, and party sounds too big. It was a dozen people. But when I had people over for the Super Bowl, I think I did have people over, like, I forget whether it was 3 or 4, but one of those numbers. Well, if it's 4 o'clock and it's 4:05, and nobody has showed up yet. Yeah, I'm looking out my front window because I have a mortal fear of hosting the world's worst party where nobody shows or three people call in sick or somebody's an hour and a half late.
Have we reached the portion now where we can say we're having a party or having dinner with friends and we don't have to put the caveat of doing it safely? Haven't been to dinner in 6 months, like where we're trying to like sugarcoat things with COVID safeties. Like, I feel like we've reached the point now where you can just say, I'm having a party this weekend.
Yeah.
And no one cares. Oh, here's Nick Wright. Here we go.
No, that's correct about the party thing, for sure.
Yeah. You can finally say it.
Yeah. There he is.
Yes. What's up?
Hey, how are you guys?
Oh, man.
Hi, Nick.
Excited. We were actually just talking about, you text that you were going to be 3 minutes late. How does this work when you're sending a text? Do you ever like to tell somebody, yeah, I'm running a few minutes late? You went specific 3 minutes there. Like, are you always very specific with that stuff?
I feel like if you are specific, people know that you mean approximately that amount of time. I feel like right. Someone says 5 minutes. It could be 15. If I'm trying to be accurate, I was a little more than 3 minutes late, but I knew it was going to be about that. Then I'm going to tell you that so you know I'm serious about it. Because if I say I'm 5 minutes late, I think you might tell your dad, you know what I mean? Go get another cup of echinacea. Like yeah. We've got time here. congrats on the highlight, team.
Thank you.
I assume we're just going, right? Like, there's no big intro, or is
there? Oh, no, yeah, we go. We started okay, before.
Everybody
yeah.
knows it's Nick Wright. We don't have to introduce this guy.
No, but you know what you do got to do is promote my new podcast, which,
yes.
You know, getting crushed by you guys on the charts is honestly, let's be, everything is. But What's Right with Nick Wright, it's the only other father and son sports podcast. It's me and my son.
That's right.
Wow, is that true?
That is true. Because Greg, you're going to be so surprised by this, and I'm not going to give you any supporting details. My son's 23 years old, Greg.
Yeah, and you look like you're about 25.
I know. That's why I said it's confusing.
Yeah, you were a toddler when he entered your life.
Greg, because on the podcast, I've started doing a bit that's called If This Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right. And It's just a poor man's Back in My Day.
That's, trust me, this is like, my dad has a little docket here of things he wants to get to. This is at the top, so we could start right there.
Okay, well, so do you want to start with the theft, or do you want to start with you and I agreeing about on some things that used to be better?
Let's start with the theft.
Okay, sure, let's do it.
And that was your word, not mine, by the way, because I consider imitation a not so sincere, but a form of flattery.
Yeah. Do you want to interrogate me, or you just want me to explain it?
No, yeah. I would like to interrogate you. Yeah, let me get the Christopher, put the big spotlight on right. Zoom right now, yeah. The police spotlight.
Yeah, no good problem.
No, I found it amusing. I was trying to find the tweet that you sent because I read it originally and it was very funny.
Greg Cody trying to find a tweet. Dangerous game.
I can recreate it for you in a segment that is not at all a direct ripoff of Greg Cody's Back in My Day. Here is my recurring segment of how things used to be better called If This Is Right, I Don't Want, If This Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
That's better than Seth Meyers, because I believe Seth Meyers just has a Back in My Day segment on his show. So,
well, that's bullshit.
Yeah. That's what I mean. It really is. It really is.
Well, I'm trying to figure out. I've been doing BIMDs, as I call them casually,
Christ,
on Levitard since 2014. I don't know when Seth began his.
You started it first. Just enough said. Enough
okay,
said.
Cheers. Fine.
I wanted to give Seth the benefit of the doubt, but when he started doing a segment, Bouillabaisse of the Month, I was like, you know what? We've got a real problem here, boys. And so I assumed that maybe you guys had some rights deal worked out, but to hear it was just theft, it makes me reconsider what I've done.
Right.
But it's just such a smash hit segment that I will say, like, I think the reason mine works is because I am, I'm 37 years old. And so hearing a guy in his mid 30s or late 30s complaining like an old man such as yourself, I think the audience likes that.
Right. Well, there is an authenticity to my ranting about the way things were, because I actually lived through most of them. Yeah. Like, I remember manual typewriters. I don't think you do.
No, I don't. So the closest thing I remember that is we had in our house growing up, it was I'm sure you know exactly what it's called, but it was like a ball bearing silver that had each letter on it. And my dad would write things. I don't know if that's considered a manual typewriter. That was like the upgrade. That was like the super soaker version of it.
Did it have the ch?
Well, it's, no. So it, because that's the, but it was, I'm not sure exactly what it was, but instead of the manual typewriter, it was just each letter you press like a big arm.
Yeah.
Whack, whack.
Yeah.
This thing was like, wow, look at this. And it was just this ball, just boom, 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 boom.
Okay.
I remember. So that's the, I am old enough to have played the Oregon Trail on an actual floppy disk, not even like the small disk, the actual floppy disk. But I am not old enough to remember never having a computer in the house. Like we had a computer in the house for as long as my memory exists.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Boy, I can't relate to that.
So can I bring up something you can relate to, Greg? Which was the original thing that I ripped off from you. You go out to eat lately, Greg?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What's been your experience when you ask for a menu?
Well, listen, I've done a Back in My Day on that.
Well,
you get five menus now.
Well, see, he might be talking more pandemic, like with the scan menu. I don't know where Nick's going.
I'm not talking. You know what? I yearn for the day of when they hand me five menus and I have to choose.
Right.
The new thing of I have to scan it with my phone.
Yeah, I hate that.
Oh, of course you hate it. First of all, you're active and your mind is still sharp. You're, if I may say, a senior citizen. Your eyes might not be what they once were. And now you're having to, you have to take out your phone. So it's terrible. It's terrible. A lot of these places don't have easily accessible Wi-Fi. So if you don't have good phone service, now we're spending 3 minutes trying to get the thing to work. And here's another thing, Greg. I am old enough to remember when having your cell phone out at dinner was verboten, was as rude. Big of a social faux pas as one could have. Now they are making it so it is required you have your cell phone out, which for the less courteous of our fellow dinner guests will give them an excuse to pretend they're scrolling the menu and they're scrolling Instagram. It's awful.
No, you're right. Yeah.
It's true.
It's the worst thing in the food industry in the past 5 years.
Wow.
I will say that pandemic driven.
Well, paper straws were pretty bad, but we've seemed to have found some other material that's better than paper straws, but yeah.
You know what? Hold up, Chris, if I may, and I apologize if I'm hijacking this. I'm not sure exactly how this
No, we love it. Please,
Chris,
we love
and this
it.
Is, I'm going to take it. A direct shot at your dad's generation. Because your dad's generation, okay. I know, you know, the baby boomers, they were like, oh, it's so great. It's so wonderful. We built this country, all this bullshit. Hey, everybody hates us millennials. So if they're such a great generation, they're pretty shitty parents, it would appear. But that's neither here nor there. So baby boomers with their, you know, milk and honey wrecked the planet, wrecked the environment, just surplus forever. And now they're all running corporations that spew out more poison into the air in 5 minutes than you or I will in our lifetime. But they have somehow convinced us that we're the problem. And that if we just use some paper straws, the planet's going to be fine. Meanwhile, there's an oil spill a week. Like, this idea that paper straws, like, oh, you asshole, you still use plastic straws? I do. Because I don't think my straw consumption is going to actually be a needle mover.
All right, let me tell you something right now,
please.
Whippersnapper. And I'm speaking for myself. I don't speak for the boomers. Oh, the straw is an unnecessary shortcut. I look down on people who use any straws. It's the easy way out.
These cups can be dirty at these restaurants.
No, take out the middleman. The straw is the middleman. He's not there for any reason whatsoever of any use. Take him out. Do away with the straw. Who would mind? Who would object?
I'll tell you who would mind.
Wow.
Because I'm not worried about the dirtiness of cups. I'm not worried about that. But I got to tell you, Greg, you're showing your privilege here, my friend. Because this is from quite the male perspective. This is from the perspective of someone who's never worn lipstick, my friend. Because for women, straws are a necessary appendage, if you will. You go out to, as you would call it, a discotheque, and they're all dolled up, and they have some rouge on their cheeks and some, you know, some lipstick on. They need it to not smear, so they need the straw.
Okay, first of all, why would you be so presumptuous as to think I've never worn lipstick?
That's a good point. That's my first question. You know what? Good job. That's a good point.
Okay.
That was rude of me.
Thank you. Never assume anything.
Yeah.
I want to say something to Nick before we get into whatever you have planned, Dad. Nick, I met you in person the first time at the Gramercy Theater in New York a few years ago. I don't know. What was that? 4 years? 5 years ago now? I don't even know.
It was pre-pandemic, so it all is a blur. Yeah.
Yeah. And you were you said something, you came up to me, you were like, man, I appreciate that you gave me this nice compliment of, dude, I've been following the show, your growth on the show. And I just want you, like, you probably don't even remember that.
I remember meeting you. Yeah.
That was like for me, because like at that time, now I'm like a grizzled vet in this world of meeting cool people and celebrity and stuff like that. I just want to let you know, at the time, that was like, I took that for like a year and was like, Nick Wright told me he's a fan of me.
Oh, that's delightful.
Like, I just like, that was really cool for me at that point in my career to like, I would have figured you didn't even know who I was. And for you to be so kind, it was just, I just want you to know that it was stuck with me. It was really cool.
I'm glad I was able to have, you know, that type of impact. But it was sincere. So like, I think people who see my TV show, think in real life I'm an asshole. I'm not, but I'm not. I'm not big into false compliments.
Right.
I won't insult someone for no reason. But if I see someone that I know their work and I think it sucks, I'll just like be like, hey, nice to meet you. Like, I won't I won't just go out of my way to lie to them. But I meant what I said.
Right.
And I think your guys' whole thing, obviously, Dan is the, you know, slightly obese right. son that it revolves around. However, the reason that it works different, and the reason, and this is something that I think one of the reasons I appreciate it, is the closest thing I ever had to it was my radio show in Kansas City, where your fans are not just fans, but like fervent supporters, and the loyalty of it is because of the way all of the parties involved in the show it becomes a family, and that's Greg, and that's you, and that's, you know, that's everybody, obviously. I don't have to list that, the whole crew.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I did think it was cool that I had, just give a little more background, then Greg can do his thing. When I first got hired by Fox in 2016, I moved out there without my wife and kids, and I commuted Houston to LA on the weekends. So every day, and I didn't have a show yet. I was just like, I was filling in for Colin and going on Colin's show. So I had the most free time I'd had in forever. And every morning I ate breakfast at the same diner, and I timed it to where every morning, because I was on the West Coast, I got to the diner right when the local hour would post.
Yeah.
So I could like sit there by myself and listen to the show. And when you listen to a radio show like that every day for a year, you can really hear, you know what I mean? Who's getting more of a shot, who's getting more involved, you know, I can.
And that was a time for us where we were just like, we were figuring out that local hour. Cause like, yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Right. And Dan was kind of taking a step back on it, and it was cool. And so like at my heart, I'm a radio guy. And so hearing somebody kind of come into their own from someone that, yeah, you weren't even in the beginning.
I used to be terrified to talk. I would be so terrified to talk at the beginning.
So you can, and someone like me that's done the bit, been in the industry, I can tell the difference. Like in the beginning, it's like, you don't even, yeah, like, wait, who was that said that? To the point to where, yeah, I got to, which was shortly before we met, where I was like legitimately like looking forward to your bits and stuff. And so I thought it was great. And so I just, yeah, it was an honest compliment. And you've overcome, yeah, you know what I mean? As we talked about, shitty boomer parenting. So hey, I mean,
yeah, shitty but well meant. Yeah. Let's clarify that.
Yeah.
All right. So Nick, you do First Things First on Fox. Yep. You do What's Right with Nick Wright. The is it a new? Would you call it a new podcast?
Yeah, it's fairly been out. New. It's been out 3 weeks. Podcast, you know, podcast, right, and YouTube show. Sure. Yeah.
Right. So, does this feel like the big time, or do you have other designs on where you want your future to go? You're still so young.
So I used to say that I was going to do sports until I was 40 and then transition to political news, and then eventually use that as a platform to run for some higher office. And so that's always what I said I was going to do. I have been, and you know, this is why the bad guys win, I suppose, but I have been so disheartened and beaten down by the last 6 years of politics in America, not that they were great before, I've kind of lost the motivation for that. And I don't think it would be good for my family. I don't think I would enjoy it. So what I honestly think I want to do now is continue doing some type of sports media for as long as I can. And if I'm being totally transparent, bank as much money as I can, and then maybe stop working earlier than I had said. Right, like I got three kids who live in New York City, go to private school, so a lot of that money not much of it gets banked. But right, professionally, the one thing that is like the carrot out there that I think I have a long ways to get to, but I really want to do, is I want to be the third guy in an NBA booth, and there's never been someone like me, like the. Almost what they tried with Tony Kornheiser on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
It sounds arrogant. I know I'd be awesome at it, but there's never been that role has never existed. And Fox obviously doesn't have the NBA rights, so I don't even have a chance to try it. But at some point, if Fox were to get NBA rights, I think play-by-play, analyst, and then me, I think it'd be really good. So that's like the next professional thing I hope to be able to do at some point.
Wow.
Like, I am not a pure analytics guy, but I understand the numbers of it. And somebody that can be a vessel from the people who are watching to the people who are calling the games, because I think that the color commentary on a lot of our national televised basketball games, aside from the ones involving, there are a few good ones, but a lot of them are, you know, it's amazing how every single guy who called the games that he happens to have played during the golden era of basketball, about how much worse it is now. And I just wish there was more of an appreciation for what we're currently watching. And I wish, here's what, like, I watch NBA all night, every night. It is just a simple statistical fact that if you're down two, going for three, if available, is such a bad, it's like going for two, unless it's a layup, should be considered a massive error, because all that gets you is a 50% chance. And I don't know that I've ever heard a local or national broadcaster make that point, because they're former players who were taught, you know what I mean, get it to overtime, extend the game, go for two. And you see it during the college basketball tournament. It's amazing how many of these analysts think you never need a three. These teams are down seven with 14 seconds up. They're like, don't need a three. It's like, you don't need a three. I think you need a three, boys. Yeah. And so I just think I'd be good at it, and I think I'd enjoy it.
So as someone who has seen transition every Patrick Mahomes' snap of his career, I'm assuming you watch it, like you're watching every Chiefs game, every play.
You're a Kansas City guy, right?
Yeah, that's right. My hometown.
Yeah, yeah. Give me the pie chart of Tyreek Hill, because we're Dolphins people down here, of Tyreek Hill's success in his career. How much of it is Andy Reid's scheme? How much of it is Patrick Mahomes? And how much of it can he bring over to the Dolphins?
Well, I think it's easier to separate Mahomes from Hill than Andy from Hill. Because, you know, Tyreek was excellent with Alex Smith with the 2 years before Patrick got there. Tyreek is a Hall of Fame talent. I had somebody incredibly close to LeBron say to me once while I was watching a game with him, he's passed LeBron as the best athlete alive. That his ability to go from stopped to full speed, like the different things he can do athletically that are just so one in a billion. Those things translate anywhere, right? My biggest concern, if I were a Dolphins fan, would simply be if you didn't grow up on, you know, filet mignon and wagyu, you're fine without it. But if it's all you ate for 4 years, how are you then going to react to, you know what I mean, to a good old fashioned Arby's roast beef, which is nothing wrong with. And but
that's what Tua is. Is that what you're saying? That's what Tua is. Yeah.
Yeah. I would be a little worried that for Tyreek psychologically, that if you go from the best team in the league, your AFC championship every year, the quarterback, I know Patrick had a rough month, but essentially never misses on throws, to a guy who at this point in his career is worse than Alex Smith was. When Alex Smith was with the Chiefs, because Tyreek can get worked up. So I think the punt return thing that he said he wants to do good is smart. Get the ball in his hands, give him opportunities. Because my concern would be, because the back end of the contract might not be great, but the back end of the contracts are always fake anyway. The question is he going to be awesome these next 3 years? And just make sure he doesn't get frustrated, because I do think it would be, you know, it's going to be a big difference for him. But that speed you guys have, I mean, I think the Bills are obviously the best team in your division. But if Tua's not awful, there's no reason you guys shouldn't be the second best team in the division and competing for that wild card.
Nick, you're comfortable talking about sports off the field when the matters get into race and morality. And I love you championing the idea that talking about race in sports is not talking about politics. It's totally different. In this case, though, at a time when the Cleveland Browns just gave Deshaun Watson what they gave him, Tyreek Hill obviously has his off-field issues, which are a few years ago, but I don't want to minimize, where he punched a pregnant girlfriend. Where is sports at right now in terms of balancing the lust for winning with any shred of morality that may be left? How should a Dolphin fan feel about Tyreek Hill? Is it all cheers and fist bumps, or, you know, chest bumps, or
Yeah.
Is a fan supposed to think, Jesus, what kind of a guy did we just sign?
So I think, so listen, the Tyreek's complicated in this regard. So we know what he did in college. And then there were some horrific allegations about him hitting his son much more recently. But those are, those initially seemed like, okay, he's going to be out of football. Then it seemed for a time like, oh my God, he got like set up in a really terrible way. And now to me, it's still a little like, I'm not, you know, passing the buck there when I say, I really don't know what I believe happened in that spot. To me, the Deshaun Watson stuff is very cut and dry. I understand he hasn't been indicted by any grand jury. I also understand that I do not believe there is a two dozen woman multi-state conspiracy against him. Like I personally believe he did a lot of what he's alleged to have done. And for Tyreek, I'm not, like you said, I'm trying to minimize it. We also know what he did in college and what he might have done a few years ago. I think in order to be a sports fan, you must, I don't say you must, I have had to take the same approach I've taken to a lot of music and a lot of movies, which is, and I know it feels like a cop-out, but is separate the art from the artist, which is like I can appreciate, you know, Thriller, even though I have real issues or questions about what Michael Jackson did or didn't do. We as a family at dinner in our house, one of the shows we watch is The Cosby Show. Okay. I love that show. I love, like, I get a great feeling watching with my family. I know what I believe he did, and I don't feel morally conflicted about it. Now, would you buy the jersey? That's a separate thing. So I say all that to say this. I think we're allowed as fans to root for our teams and recognize that with, you know, that many people within, you know, an organization, there are going to be some bad actors. I have a far greater issue with what the Browns did than what the Dolphins did.
Yeah.
They are not quite apples and bowling balls, but they're closer to that than apples and oranges. Like, the Browns to me have not only rewarded but potentially enabled behavior that we have no reason to believe, like, was not, you know, I don't want to say is ongoing, but it feels much more recent and it feels much more rampant. And so if I were a woman and a Browns fan, I think I would be asking myself, why does this team want me to be a fan? Like, do they give, you know what I mean? And so in that regard, I understand the conflict. And I don't know, man, like, it's the Browns, the contract and all of it with the Browns with Deshaun feels really, really uncomfortable. And if I were, and I know you were talking about Tyreek, but I understand why, for if you're a Dolphins fan and you read the Flores lawsuit, why you might say, you know what, like I'm going to pick a new team. Now, the unfortunate reality is, and this is why I said it's hard to be a sports fan, it's going to be hard to find a team or an organization that's hands are totally clean of all this stuff. Like, some are dirtier than others, but it's just, it's hard to be, with the information we have available to us now, it's hard to feel great, but I don't know. I know this feels like cop out, but I don't feel great about my iPhone. I don't feel great about my damn tennis shoes.
If you start playing that game,
you know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff that there's some people, you know, there's, you know, there are things that, I'm going to say this, you know, carefully. There are things that my corporate parent, the people that own the company I work for, I don't feel great about. You know what I mean? Like, the,
yes.
And so
I know exactly what you mean, as a matter of fact.
And so, you know, I think that we all have to, you know, I can tell you a very quick story, because I know we only have like 10 minutes left and you have other stuff. The only person I've ever seen that actually puts their actions where their morality is at like close to 100% of the time as possible is my dad. When my parents got divorced, my dad's a union president in Kansas, Missouri, Firefighters Union. He and I spent 7 hours driving from place to place looking for an American-made television, because he only would buy it.
Wow.
My mom, post their divorce, she bought me a used Acura for my first car. He saw it and he said, "Son, you know I love you. You'll always be my son. You are not allowed to drive that car to my house, my union hall, or the fire station. You can take the bus.
Wow.
He's like, he was, it was like union made, American made, from his terrible looking shoes to his cardboard pants to his whatever television he had. Like, he actually did it. But most of us, you know, we bend our own morality for either our own entertainment or enjoyment or whatever it is.
I thought you were going to say Will Smith, by the way, when you were saying, you know, who always keeps it real? He always keeps it real.
I love the high-mindedness of your father's crusade for American products. And even more than that, I love the phrase cardboard pants.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not saying you can't get good American-made material, but maybe my dad was just shopping at the wrong places. I'm not certain.
I'm a poker guy. I love like the World Series of Poker. I love watching stuff. I love going to, I don't play as much as I used to, but I love going out to a multi-table tournament whenever I can. And I know you got into
this. You guys have a great casino there. Is it the Hard Rock?
Yeah.
Yeah. The big guitar.
Yeah. The Hard Rock.
Yep.
Yeah. They have a good series there. I've played a few of those tournaments, a few of the, like the 550s and stuff. But, I'm wondering, like, that was so cool. I don't know, was it a few months back now? You, like, had a nice run where you were playing with Phil Hellmuth and, like, you were getting in there with those guys. And I'm just wondering, like, what was that experience like for you? Like, the first time you were in that thing, was there any kind of, like, or are you just such a TV pro at this point that you weren't actually that nervous?
Well, no. The very first time I was in it, it was a cash game, and I said, I'm not going to be nervous. I'm going to play my game, and I lost $31,000 in 4 hours. And I was like, okay, that's real money. You got to bring it with you. It's all then, but it was the moment. Then the very next night I played Negreanu, Hellmuth, a few amateurs, Maria Ho, in a $10,000 a person tournament, one table tournament, sit and go. Okay. And I won it. So then I was up.
Yeah.
On the week. And then the next day I played with pros again, same as the first night, the cash buy-in. And I broke even almost to the dollar. So then I kind of got my feet underneath me. But then Hellmuth and I played heads up.
Yeah.
In a heads up match for 50K each. And I blew it. I had him. And then I, like, this was why he's a pro and I'm not. After 2.5 hours, I was crushing him. And then I just lost concentration for about an hour. And then he was crushing me, and we played. It was a 6-hour match, but he ended up getting me in the end.
So Phil Hellmuth are these guys as good as they are made out to be? Is what I'm asking.
I mean, Phil. So listen, I haven't played with any of the wizards,
right?
The Stephen Chidwick, Ali Amshirovich, those guys that are just like the GTO. They've solved the game, wizards.
Because those guys look down on like the old school guys, right? There's like a beef between like the old school
on Hellmuth,
right?
Yeah, but Hellmuth keeps kicking their ass. So here's the thing. Those guys have, you know, come as close to solving the game as possible. But Phil does have a reel. There is a thing that bird watchers, it's been shown and established, that bird watchers, like longtime bird watchers, can see a bird come over the horizon when all you can see is,
yes.
I think Gladwell wrote about this, is like a little tiny, like a shadow of the bird almost. And with a high level of accuracy, tell you what bird that is. And there's no defining feature. And what they've called it is they can read the giss of the bird, like the feeling it gives them when they see it. They can't explain it, but they can tell you. I think Hellmuth has that with poker. I don't think you can. He has a feeling of the moment and whatever your nonverbal ticks or cues or whatever. And I think he's phenomenal. I'm also going to, you know, I'm going to be much more involved in that scene. You know, poker was one of my biggest passions, still is. And so I'm going to be more involved in some of those games or broadcasts or something to some degree.
Nice.
And maybe I'll lose money, maybe not. But like that's, you know, when I said, retire earlier than I thought, one of the things if and when I do that, I'll at one point spend 6 months traveling like those, the World Poker Tour circuit or the big poker events. I love that. I love it.
There's something about multi-table tournaments for me personally. I want to so bad, like carve a month out in one of these years coming up and go out to like Vegas for the World Series and just play like a bunch of
them. For the series.
Yeah. I'm going to do that eventually. But
take two weeks this summer and do it, Chris.
No, I'm serious. I want to.
Yeah, I think it's it's funny. If I'm still doing the show remotely, come the summer, which I think we will. I think we'll be back in studio come
fall
football season. I think I'm gonna rent a house in Vegas for a month, bring my family out there and play in a bunch of these tournaments over the summer.
I want to. I love the idea of it more than I think I'm actually good. I don't play enough to be really great, but I just love it, man. Still. I just love it.
Yeah, you got there that DraftKings money. Yeah, you got to do it. Yeah.
Well, first of all,
we got to let Nick go. We've kept him too long.
Go ahead. If you got one more thing, I got to leave to pick up my daughter in about 3 minutes. So we got time for one more thing. If you got it,
give me 2 quick minutes on the Miami Heat, the crazy NBA East race where the 8th seed could very well win and earn the right to lose to Phoenix in the finals. How do you see the Miami Heat and the East race right now shaking out?
Okay, listen, I think Miami's wildly disrespected, and I think it is actually shrapnel of the media's obsession with disrespecting the greatest athlete ever, LeBron James, not because LeBron played for the Heat, but because they want to make the bubble as if everything in it was a fluke, when it's like, okay, so the Heat made the finals in the bubble. What have they done since then? Well, last year they were really good, and then they got their ass kicked by the Bucks. Well, guess what? Everyone got their ass kicked by the Bucks. They have the greatest player alive. And this year the Heat are the one seed and should absolutely be taken seriously. So, listen, I happen to think the Bucks are going to run roughshod over everyone until the finals, but I think they'll win the title. So I think you guys – I think that there is no reason to believe any team in the East – other than Milwaukee, should be favored in the series over Miami. I truly believe that. And this idea that Brooklyn, which can't get their act together enough to beat Charlotte in a must-win game for seeding purposes when Kyrie is first game back at home, the other night they're tied in the fourth quarter with Detroit, and after the game Steve Nash is asked, what are you going to do about the defense? He's like, I don't know. It's like, buddy, literally your job. Like, the Nets are a – if the Nets have, of the 5 Eastern Conference contenders, so Philly, Miami, Boston, Brooklyn, and obviously Milwaukee, the Nets have clearly the worst coach, the worst depth, the worst defense by a mile, and people talk shit on Miami's home court advantage. You want to see a non-existent home court advantage, go to a Brooklyn game where it's Knicks fans who can't get Knicks tickets chanting MVP for the opposing team star. So the idea that team is going to do a 99 Knicks and go from the 8th seed to the finals, it's one of the biggest jokes I've ever heard. If I'm Miami, I just want to be on the opposite side of the bracket as Milwaukee and take my chances. But I think if Milwaukee's 1 and Miami's 2 or Miami's 1 and Milwaukee's 2, I think that's going to be our Eastern Conference Finals.
I didn't know people were talking shit about the Heat's home court. Jeez, I guess that's a thing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nick, dude. We appreciate you guys.
Great job. What's Right in the Great Podcast? Subscribe. I need if 5% of Levitard and Chris Cody Show and Greg Cody Show followers subscribe to the podcast. Again, you don't ever have to listen to it. Just subscribe to it. I don't actually care if you listen. Just subscribe to it. I'll be in great shape. See you guys. Bye.
See you, man.
See you.
Appreciate you.
Absolutely. See you. Congrats. Great talking to you, Greg.
Thanks.
Chris, congrats on everything, bro.
Stay in touch, man. Thank you.
And listen, if I come to Miami for a poker tournament, I'm going to hit you up.
Dude. Bro, I'm in.
Yeah, there's a big series coming up. I think it's a high dollar series, but a big series coming up at the Hard Rock.
Yeah. If you're in town, hit me up for sure. Let's link up.
I'm going to come down at some point and I'll hit you up.
Yeah, dude. All right, see later.
You. Bye.
Great. Thanks, Nick. Thanks again to Nick Wright. I don't say this a lot with guests, but I really have the feeling Nick Wright's going to be like a big star.
He's in just this business. Like, most people in this industry, they're either, you know, journalists or they're. Right. You know, somebody who's he just is a take artist that right. he's risen to where he's at just because he knows his shit and he is good at expressing himself.
Right.
Unlike me, I'll talk for 7 minutes and not be as like say as many cool shit as Nick Wright will.
Yeah. He also has that hard to tap combination of funny. Erudite and well informed. I mean,
right. He's likable. Like it is weird. Like he's like a nerd, but also cool at the same time. He's got a nice balance to him.
Exactly. Christopher, you and Billy Gill did something really cool with the Marlins the other day, and I want to talk to you about that because how was that? Like, tell us about it.
We called a Marlins spring training game. Thank God we had a play-by-play guy, so it was just kind of us being the color analysts, but it was a lot of fun. I don't know how it, you know, I think our audience liked it. I think if someone was tuning in just for a baseball game, they were like, what the hell am I listening to? I don't think I was as polished as I could be if I really like had some games under my belt, but it was fun. Like, there's no doubt about that. And let's get to something right here, because I don't want to spoil anything for the audience, but after my broadcasting debut, I gave you a call and I had something exciting to share with you. So I think I recorded the conversation. It was such an exciting moment that I don't want to say anything else. I want to play the phone call that happened and then we can react to it after.
Hello?
Yo.
What's going on?
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm getting ready to go do some yard work, actually.
You will not believe the call that I just got.
Okay.
The Marlins just called me and are offering Billy and I like the gig this year on radio.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like every game? Like full time?
I mean, they would offer that, but they're willing to work with us and just do home games because, like, you know, they don't want us doing it remotely. So, like, because if we don't want to stop what we're doing with Levitard, like, or we could leave what we're doing with Levitard and do it full time.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And it's, like, a good amount of money, and I'm freaking out right now. And, like, I have, like, one stipulation now. It's not producing the Greg Cody Show.
No way.
Yeah.
Why is that a stipulation? I know the Marlins hate me.
I mean, that's what they've said.
Oh, my God.
I'm just kidding. It's April Fool's.
Oh, my God. You had me. My Lord. Oh, my God.
And I'm recording this for the Greg Cody Show.
Oh, my God. You literally had me going. Oh, my God. You had me going.
Oh, man.
I owe you bad. I owe you big. I mean, seriously, I was buying that whole thing. I was just about to get serious and say you should work out a deal where you continue to do the Levitard show and you only do the first game of every homestand. Wow, you had me going. I swear, I don't think I've been fooled like that on an April Fool's joke in years.
Oh, I love it.
I hate it.
Wow. I could have kept it going so much longer. I feel like there was a lot of things going on there. I was worried about you saying something insanely offensive to the Marlins.
Right.
I was worried about you having a heart attack just from stress. There were a lot of reasons there where I pulled the parachute well before I could have. I could have kept you going for 20 minutes on that, I feel like.
Right. I will say I'm not the kind of guy who's considers himself gullible. I don't get fooled every April 1st. But you had me.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest with you. You had me. You played it well. The circumstances were right. There were some nice touches.
I want that to be the first of many. Like, I know, like, you're going to claim, like, I can't be God again. Me and Yeti, I think over the next few months, we want to keep pranking you. I'm going to make this a theme going forward.
Okay. So you're not even going to wait for April 1st. Like, every few months, you're going to try.
No, I just think I like that. I like the idea of pranking you.
Okay. All right. Well, you got me there, I will tell you. Hey, before we get out of here, I want to say something about March Madness into April, March into April Madness.
Are you going to talk about Coach K? I feel like everyone was frauds. This everyone was acting like this Coach K thing was a big deal. I don't think it was a big deal. Like, he's gone. It's fine. No one gives a shit. Okay. Everyone's faking.
Here's the thing about this March Madness. And unlike a lot of other journalists, I include the women and the men. It was...
Oh, wow. You're so progressive, Greg.
I really am. It was a blockbuster Final Fours. I mean, blue bloodiest ever. The blue bloodiest two Final Fours ever. There were no Cinderellas in this Final Four. I mean, look at the... We're recording this as the women's championship game is tipping off. And you've got South Carolina, which has been number one all season, front to back, versus UConn, which has won 11 championships, but was not expected to be in this one. And then the men, oh, my gosh. But here's the thing. March Madness gave us zero Cinderellas in the Final Four.
Which never happens. Like, you're acting like that's like a big thing.
Okay. But this year especially. There was one Cinderella story that we could have had, which is Coach K on a ladder with tears streaming down his face, cutting down the net, and we didn't get that.
Watching college coaches climb ladders is an underrated thing.
It really is.
Like, I'm thinking back to Bill Self climbing that ladder. Like, I think it was when they got to the Final Four last weekend. I just remember watching that and being like, this is funny. I just like the idea of all the coaches climbing ladders, because right. then the up part they're good with. It's the awkwardness of the down. They don't want to embarrass themselves on national TV. They're, you know, very, you know, gingerly stepping down. And it's just funny because you can tell that none of these coaches have done any handiwork in 30 years by the way they're climbing a ladder. Like, these are millionaires that have paid for everything in their lives. Like, Bill Self hasn't climbed a ladder outside of cutting a net down in 20 years.
Right. But you know who has? Greg Cody.
Yeah, of course. You're Mr. Handy. Here we go.
I'm going to tell you. And the college basketball has raised the self-esteem of the ladder and ladder climbing.
Well, they do this thing now where they do the ladder with the platform. So they get up to a certain, they climb halfway up a ladder and then there's a platform. I don't like that. Get an old-fashioned ladder. Let them stand awkwardly and cut the net.
I totally agree with you. I'm a ladder man. I mean, I'm up in my black olive tree.
No, you're not. You think you're everything. You think you're Salt Life. You think you're a country soul. You're not a ladder man. You're not Handy.
No, I am. I'm a ladder man.
No, you're not.
And when I'm up in my, amid the branches of my black olive tree in my front yard, I'm looking around.
Dad, you go up there once a year to put Halloween stuff. Like, you're not up there all the time. You're not a tree guy.
I am looking around to see if any of my neighbors are appreciating that I'm up at a ladder, because I'm doing the equivalent. I'm winning a championship.
Okay.
Okay. By putting up that Chucky doll in my black olive tree, I am winning my personal championship by being on a ladder.
You look more awkward than Bill Self climbing down a ladder. Tim Allen. What's his name? What was his character? Joey, what was Tim Allen's name in Home Improvement? Tim, you're no Tim Taylor.
Okay.
You know Tim the Two Man Taylor.
Okay. What the hell is Joey doing there?
I'm asking me and Joey just got done with at least one of my friends came out to the highlight match this Sunday.
How'd the cones do?
Greg Cody sold me out. All my Levitard Show friends sold me out. It was me and Joey just getting hammered at a cones game on a Sunday night.
Okay.
But the cones were 4-1, another dominant performance.
Wow.
Ever since I became the owner, I think their worst match is 3-2. Like, they went 6-0, they went 5-0, 4-1, 4-1, 3-2, 4-1, I think, since I've owned them. Like, it's
wow.
They are dominating. They've clinched a spot in the championship game, which will be on April 17th. Too bad you and I will be on a cruise.
I know. And it's too bad. It really is. Because you know I would be there.
Yeah. I mean, you sold me out tonight, so I don't know you'd be there. But I know me and Joey would be there.
I wouldn't say I sold you out. I was home to make a beautiful Sunday meal. We made lobster rolls, which were fantastic.
You hold this like Sunday dinner thing in like this like sacred, like no one gives a shit about it but you.
No, I do. It's sacrosanct. Every family needs a tradition. Mine is the Sunday meal. And we knocked it out the park with
every family rolls. Needs a tradition that only one person cares about.
Well, you know what? Better one than none.
All right.
Am I right?
Good episode. Okay. Look at us. Nick Wright, an April Fool's joke. The Greg Cody Show Olympics that people might actually like.
Oh, they will.
I'm feeling good about this episode.
Yeah, they're gonna love it. I do. I feel good about this. And Pod family, thank you all. I say it every week. I mean it every week. We really appreciate you all. Keep coming back. Tell your friends. Subscribe. Unsubscribe. Resubscribe. And continue doing that ad infinitum, because we really appreciate it. And you know what? You know what we're gonna do? We're going to see you next week. That kind of thing.
When you say pod family, I kind of want to do the thing I do where I combine words and I say Pamley. And that makes me think of Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee. And that makes me think of, Dad, have you ever seen that video?
I have not.
I think you're lying.
Baby!